And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you this Wednesday, the 17th of May. It's 9:05. You're very welcome along to the middle 9 till noon show of the week. And it's another busy one for you. We've got so much to talk about and we want you involved in that conversation as well. I'll tell you how to get in touch, won't I? Of course, 07491 25000 is the telephone number. 07491 25000. If you're outside the Republic, of course, 00353 749 125000. Caroline and Niamh taking your calls. If you want to WhatsApp or text us, it's 086 60 25000. Again, from outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25000. And your emails come into us at comments@highlandradio.com. Let's take a look at what's making some of the front pages and inside the papers this morning. Let's start with the Inish Times. Family left petrified by attack on refugee centre is their lead story. The owners of an emergency accommodation centre in Bonkrana that houses 50 refugees say residents have been left petrified by what they have described as an attempt to set fire to the building. The owner of the Sailors' Best Accommodation Centre said a firework was thrown at the building close to the town shorefront at around 11 p.m. on Monday night. Christopher and Sharon Flanagan, who run the centre, which was open to refugees at the end of March, say CCTV footage shows there was a clear attempt to throw a firework through an open window on the roof. And we spoke yesterday to Christopher Flanagan, and it's in the first hour, the second hour of yesterday's programme. If you wish to listen back to the podcast when we're finished live today, of course. On to the Donegal Post. After the emotional roller coaster of the last few months, a contractor has been appointed for the new building at Gaelscoil na Cathaoirmeach Street. It's expected that work will begin before the end of the month. The school community can finally breathe a collective sigh of relief after a tumultuous year. The school was one of 58 nationally for which funding was put on hold for building projects earlier this year. Approval was finally given last month after a committed and hard-fought campaign by the school community, and congratulations to them as well for keeping in such a well-organised and dignified manner, keeping that project to the forefront that it could not be ignored. And those prefabs have perhaps served their purpose to some extent, but if you ever see the site of it, you wouldn't imagine that that has been that school for a couple of decades. You know, long overdue, that work getting underway at the site there. The Finn Valley Voice tells us that five new townhouses, a new bar and a new restaurant are set to change the business face of Navanie Street, Ballybuffet. John Quinn has applied for planning permission to convert the former Mulrines furniture store for residential use, while Tommy Gallen of Gallen Group recently purchased Heaney's You Drop In and The Paradise, a new Indian Bangladeshi restaurant and takeaways due to open at the former gallery restaurant premises. Sounds lovely. On to the Nationals now. Let's start with the Irish Times. And the government has been warned that the protests against accommodation for asylum seekers could escalate amid tensions within the coalition over the response to the migration crisis. At its meeting yesterday, Minister for Integration Roderick O'Gorman told colleagues that even with 200 to 300 new accommodation spaces expected this month, there'll still be a gap between what the state can provide and what is needed. In addition to the new refugee accommodation centre in Inch, County Clare, which has faced strong local resistance, another three are due to be announced in Dublin. One is said to be in the Dunleary area, with the location of the other two yet to be made known. Minister for Justice Simon Harris is said to have told the meeting that he and the Garda are very concerned about the situation, that it could escalate, telling colleagues that there have been 125 anti-immigration protests in Dublin in the 4.5 months of this year. However, a number of sources with knowledge of discussions at cabinet level said Minister for Housing Dara O'Brien pushed back against Mr O'Gorman when the Green Party TD repeated a request for assistance from other departments in accommodation in accommodating refugees. And I did hear an interview with the Green senator earlier today, who effectively said it was her opinion that Roderick O'Gorman had been thrown under the bus and that it would require an all-of-government response, but that he was being left pretty much to his own devices. But they're going to have to do something because they can't keep bringing people in to mistreat them either, can they? There has to be if there is not accommodation and no solution to it, well, you know, they can't be, presumably, you can't be treating people like that. So they're going to have to come up with some sort of a plan one way or other. The Irish Independent this morning. Junior cycle students will not be shown pornography as part of the new social, personal and health education programme. That's according to Education Minister Norman Foley. There will be no pornography material taught or shown in our schools, and pornography will not be taught. What will be taught will be respect for yourself, respect for others, she said. Ms. Foley was commenting after the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment published the specification for the updated programme, which also includes relationship and sexuality education. Incoming first years in September will be the first to be taught the new syllabus, which has been radically updated to take account of the realities and pressures of the modern world. Pornography, sexual consent, gender identity, and risks associated with vaping and sharing images online are all part of the new course for 12 to 16-year-olds. Ms. Foley referenced a recent University of Galway study showing that a huge percentage of 10 to 13-year-olds, particularly boys, were accessing pornography on their phones. She said children needed to be safeguarded and to be able to access information in a safe space with trained professionals who were doing all they can every single day to mentor, to mind and to guide them. So that's starting in September. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And Rory Gallagher has stepped down as Derry senior football manager. The county board confirmed last night, and many people will be surprised that the county board gave him the space to leave on his own terms, but that's what happened. Former assistant manager Kieran Mina will assume the role for the rest of this season. Mr. Gallagher had stepped back from his role last Friday ahead of last Sunday's Ulster final following allegations of serious domestic violence from his estranged wife on social media last week. The allegations were previously reported to the authorities, but prosecutors have said there was insufficient evidence to bring a case. I believe that's the PSNI said that. I'm not sure what the situation is with An Garda Síochána, whether any complaints were made or whether any prosecution or investigation took place. The Derry GEA board responded to reports it had been sent an email making it aware of Ms. Gallagher's allegations, saying it may have been sent to a defunct email address. In a statement announcing Mr. Gallagher's resignation, the board said it would be making no further comment at this time. In a statement on Friday night last, Mr. Gallagher said he would step aside from his role ahead of Derry's Ulster final clash with Armagh. I have advised Derry GEA that I am stepping back as Derry senior football manager with immediate effect, he said. So the language there obviously was somewhat confusing on Friday, because that's not stepping down or resigning, that was simply stepping back. He went on to say that this decision is born out of a desire to protect my children from the ongoing turmoil. They will always be my priority. In a message posted to social media on Tuesday last, Nicola Gallagher detailed a number of alleged instances of physical abuse over a lengthy period. Mr. Gallagher had said that the allegations have been investigated and dealt with by the relevant authorities. So that's how he referenced those most serious of allegations, that they had been dealt with by the relevant authorities. On to the Sun this morning, and a lorry driver claimed he was not aware of offensive chanting about murder victim Michaela McCreevy when he streamed a video that featured the sixth slur. Many of you out there may have seen that video at the time. Well, Andrew McDale is challenging the decision by his former employer to dismiss him in the aftermath of a Facebook Live broadcast last May. He had been attending an event at Dundonald Orange Hall in County Down when he live-streamed singing, which appears to mock tragic Michaela. Well, it does. Former Tyrone GEA manager Mickey Hart's daughter was murdered while on honeymoon in Mauritius in 2011. The clip sparked widespread condemnation across Northern Ireland and beyond. However, Mr. McDade contends he wasn't aware of the offensive chanting and had simply been streaming to show the atmosphere of the day at the event to mark the North's centenary. So that is a case which is ongoing. We were talking yesterday to the AA about, yes, it's great to see fuel prices have come down somewhat, but that taxes are going back on the fuel in increments over the next wee while. And Transport Minister Eamon Ryan's been commenting on this, and he's not for turning Excise and duty on petrol and diesel must rise in 2 weeks if Ireland is to have a stable revenue base. That's according to Eamon Ryan. The government cut the levy in March last year as fuel prices soared due to the war in Ukraine. In February, it was announced the cuts would be restored on a phased basis between June and September. The first increase coming up on June the 1st will add 6 cent and 5 cent to a litre of petrol and diesel respectively. When asked if he believed it was appropriate for fuel prices to rise while the country is in the middle of a cost of living crisis, Mr. Ryan said the cuts must be phased out. The Green Party leader added, "We set out clearly that's what we would do. That will give us the capability if we were in another crisis. The flexibility to use similar measures." Now, when we talked about this yesterday, I'm not going to lie, the phones did not light up with people saying, oh, you can't return that duty and excise to fuel. But that doesn't mean there's, no opposition to it out there. And finally, in the Irish Daily Star, if you're texting someone romantically, an Irish emoji expert has set out the do's and don'ts in using the symbols while flirting. Keith Brony says the red love heart, that purple aubergine and a smiley face, the devil face that is, are best avoided. The editor-in-chief of emoji search engine Emojipedia believes they can be used to inject a sense of playfulness with flirtatious banter. But using the aubergine, peach and water droplets too early in a potential relationship may come across as too much, as they have developed different types of connotations. And the Dubliner claims people should also avoid using the fire emoji, anything with red hearts and the disembodied tongue during initial stages of dating. Just a little tip for you there in case you're in the first throes of something. All right, that's a run through the papers. Councillor Michael McClafferty, independent, Cathaoirleach of the Glenties Municipal District. Firstly, Michael, I haven't spoken to you since you were appointed as Cathaoirleach. A great honour for you. Congratulations in that appointment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Craig. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Right. Now, we're talking about a scene you came across this morning on the Creasler Road. I've seen the pictures of it. I'm not going to share them as we stream the show because they are really quite unsettling. But describe what you came across.
Yeah, basically, Greg, come across this morning. And basically what it is, a car earlier this morning, early this morning or late this night, had a deer outside of Creasler, between Creasler and Fanny on the main M56 there. So as a result, you can see there from the photos I sent you, and supposed to be fair, well, viewer beware, they are a bit graphic to be fair, but so you have parts of the car for quite a distance, then you have the deer then at the end of the distance, then a few feet away from the deer, then Greg, as you see there, you have a baby calf then that was born as well, either before the accident or after the accident is unclear, but either way, the calf is lying dead as well as the mother just gave birth, a matter of feet away, a couple of feet away from his dead mother, and as I say, the calf is dead as well. Mm. Now, this is a terrible, terrible situation to come across this morning. And I've been calling for a call now for some time as councillor in the Glenties area. Other people have been highlighting this as well, as my colleagues have. For example, Councillor Neil Colin Gillespie highlighted there a few months ago back over there around the Low and Dooley, around that area, where a deer was hit by an ambulance and killed. So obviously the ambulance was out of commission as well that day. I'm not sure what the circumstances of the ambulance were, what it was going to a case or coming back from a case, but either way, the ambulance was put off the road then for a period of time. There was another serious accident there subsequent to that then, a couple of weeks afterwards then, and that general catching there again over there, where a colleague of mine, Mary Therese, highlighted as well. On that occasion, there was a small child involved on that occasion, and the car got highly traumatised at the time as a result of that. Narrowly escaped injury, as the photos would show, of the damage in the car. And, Greg, it's at the stage now, it's way beyond the stage. We've all been calling, I've seen for people there last week as well, and last week's Farmers Journal, and it is the copy of last week's Farmers Journal, they're also calling for a call on it as well.
But what does a call look like, do you think? Because we saw last year a record amount of deers called, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was, I think 48,000, something like that there. Or maybe it was 55,000. But anyway, be that as it may, 1,900 deer were called in Donegal last year. So how far do you want to go with this? I mean, maybe I'm being naive here, but they seem like big numbers, 1,900 deers culled. I mean, are we doing it correctly? Are we culling the right deer? Or maybe we need to be looking at better fencing or something. I don't know. But how many more than 1,900 deer do we need to be shooting every year?
Well, I don't know, Greg, how many we need to be shooting every year, but we need to be shooting enough anyway, taking them out of the equation. They're doing two things clearly after today anyway. We need to be doing two things. First of all, we need to be getting a clear call out there, a clear all-out call on getting the numbers well down. Secondly, preferably running alongside, we seriously need to see about fencing along these hotspots. Seriously need to see about fencing. Because it is so dangerous. You're right there, what you said there a second ago as well. 55,000, I saw it myself in that article there last week, was called all through the place. But it's clearly, Greg, shows, God knows how many actual deer we have in this county alone, never mind the whole of Ireland, that are running wild. And it's at the stage now that's clearly out of control. Mm. Because that's quite a lot of cared alone now that I can think of this year, that I'm aware of, by the way. We're not even in June yet, but that's quite a number of cars this year in the Glenties area, both myself and, as I said there a second ago, my colleagues have covered by Trace and Neil Collum. I believe John Hemmings come across one there recently as well.
It's certainly not uncommon. And just in relation to liability here, I mean, it's an awful sight, that poor deer being hit, and it's clearly evident that its calf was born, as you say, either just before or just after, because it's a brand new born calf, and that's completely evident. But in terms of the motorist as well, who perhaps couldn't avoid the deer, I'm sure they couldn't avoid the deer, extensive damage caused to their vehicle, they're liable for the repair of that, are they?
Well, of course they're liable for the repair. We don't know that. We don't know what happened. We don't know the circumstances of the motors. I don't know at this moment in time if the motors is hurt themselves or not, or injured. I don't know that. All we know is just the debris of the car that is there, and I say the way the photo shows the devastation. Like, this is the problem as well. They're, at the moment, nobody is taking liability of who is responsible for these deers. And I would say, going to what both myself and you're saying there in the last couple of minutes, is the reason why there are so many. Like I said this morning earlier on there, regardless, these deers are originating from the likes of Glenveagh or various other park and wildlife parks like it throughout Ireland, where the deers were introduced to some years ago. Fences got broken down then, fences weren't maintained, the deer started to escape, and as a result now, or casually if you like, we have these possibly hundreds of deer, if not thousands of deer, running way, way over rampant wild, and nobody's taking responsibility. And as we speak as of this morning, Greg, Parks and Wildlife has still not addressed a letter sent by request of myself through the county to them there some weeks ago. They haven't addressed it. And we also on that situation as well, we asked them as well to come in to the Glenties MD to address myself and other councillors. And at the moment, we have no reply either way.
At the moment, the problem is what we do know is we know 55,000 deer were culled last year. We know 1,890 were culled in Donegal, but we don't know that as a percentage of the deer population because we don't know how many deer there are. That being said, Minister Charlie McConnell did recently, did he not, along with Dara O'Brien, because his department have some responsibility in that, they did launch a deer management strategy group to develop a national deer management strategy. So clearly, you would imagine the government recognises there is an issue here. That needs to be fast-tracked then, because we need to know how many deer there are and what needs to be done to control the population. So whatever the government is doing, they need to crack on with it ASAP.
They need to crack on with ASAP, of course, Greg, and clearly so, you're right. And that's fair play to Charlie and what they've done. That's all helpful and it'll be useful. And hopefully they can fast-track it as well. But the thing is here as well, if Parks and Wildlife don't engage with the likes of myself or engage with the council that have written to them, that's really dragging the heels as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
Because, like I said this morning to Karen, it's very simple for Parks and Wildlife. All they have to do is acknowledge the letter or letters that are going into them and just state, put a reply to the letters, and then people will know then where they're at then. We need replies from Parks and Wildlife to the correspondence sent to them. Because while they're not corresponding, Greg, to be fair, they are still a branch and arm of the situation here alongside the government that are dragging the heels as far as I'm concerned if they're not going to reply. Because regardless what the government's doing anyway, and welcome what Charlie and associates are doing in the government, that's fair enough, it'll all be welcomed. But alongside that, Charlie needs the cooperation as well of the Parks and Wildlife, as do we in the council, as do you in Highland Radio as well, to find out numbers and statistics and everything else and what's going on. And we need to avoid situations like this morning, because, as I said in the video this morning, something could happen. Something has happened this morning. Obviously, somebody's car is badly damaged, possibly wrecked. We don't know the situation with the driver, if they're okay or otherwise, or other people possibly in the car either.
Well, listen, there is actually a majority of public, because there was a recent survey, I think, done in May of people, and the majority of them, 8 out of 10, I believe, claimed that the national deer herd does need to be culled. You're talking about road safety as well, but also there is the whole biodiversity issue there as well, that a lot of people have concerns with. So, but just moving on, also, do the public know what to do if a deer is hit? Now, obviously, in the first instance, if you know, you care for your own safety or the safety of those in the vehicle, but let's just say, you know, it's material damage. What does one do if you hit a deer? Because someone has to be notified, presumably, that this large animal and its offspring are lying dead on the side of the road. So is there a procedure in place? Do you know what one does in that situation?
Well, what one should do in that situation, either at the time or those either who come along with it, either, it doesn't matter if money comes along with it, they all do the same thing. First of all, notify the Gardaí at first instance, and they will let them know there's been an accident clearly. That's the first port of call I got on this morning before contacting yourselves. Second to that, then contact the council to organise getting the situation dealt with and that at hand, like disposed of and so on, through the proper channels. Those are the two things should be done first of all. Anyway.
Yeah, I think people too, though, need to be assured that they don't get into trouble for it, because I would imagine if someone hits a deer, they don't know, you know, they don't know who's responsible. Could they get into trouble for reporting it? You know what I mean? There is actually quite a gap in information out there when you think about it.
Well, I don't see how anybody gets into trouble for reporting it, Greg, to be quite honest with you. Because actually now, I would actually argue the other way now, what is happening, the under-reporting now is causing a problem as well. If they're not reporting to the Gardaí, if they're not reporting to the council, if they're not lifting the phone or sending a text to yourselves at Highland, sending either a photo or whatever, like a wrecked car, so on, etc., we are not going to get the true story or the true facts of things. Because if I can understand when somebody hits a car, it's the last thing in their mind, obviously, reporting it. Possibly. Look, their car is wrecked, they're damaged, they're possibly in a state of shock themselves, maybe they're injured. So taking that responsibility totally away from the person as an accident, but the responsibility lies there with everybody else then that comes along then
to report
on the accident.
Okay, finally, a few people texting in here saying that we have to share, effectively, I'm paraphrasing a group of them which I'll read in detail a little later on, but they're effectively saying that it's not the deer's fault, you know, we have to share this land with them, and that motorists need to slow down and be more careful and to stop blaming the beautiful wild deer.
But Greg, it's a main road. It's a main road. Like these animals, yes, these animals, of course, we all want to live alongside them. But the point I'm making here is somebody needs to take responsibility for them. If my cow or my sheep or my dog or my pig or goat ran out in front of the road of you and Greg Hughes coming down the, wherever, into the Kenny down Lurgy Bracken, one of my animals have had a farm there, ran in front of you and you had it. Well, the first thing you're going to be looking for then, possibly, Greg, is who owns this animal? And you won't need to go too far because there'll be a tag number, identification number on the animal. If the farmer of the day, like myself, who doesn't go far and say, sorry, Greg, that's my animal, look, we'll sort out the damage in your car or your vehicle. All you need to do then is ring the Department of Agriculture on the phone. Say, look, I have a dead animal here. I read it, this wee tag number to you in his ear. That'll identify immediately on their computer who owns that animal.
Okay, right.
Unfortunately,
listen. Yeah, go.
We
yeah.
don't have that situation with the deer.
No, of course.
And also with the deer as well, which doesn't be talked about so much either, is the deer as well, no more than the badger, include ham as well, can be caused as well of causing tuberculosis along cattle and so on. That's another concern that farmers would have as well,
yeah.
Greg.
Yeah, and of course that sort of falls into the whole biodiversity thing as well. I get you. Okay, well,
yes,
listen.
Yes, the whole biodiversity thing as well, yes.
Yeah, all right. Well, as I say, you know, a public consultation has been launched. It needs to be fast-tracked. I don't know how we can even attempt to manage something that we don't know the number of, so that's one thing they need to get their finger out on. But for now, Councillor Michael McLafferty, thanks for raising the issue with us. All right, some of your comments coming in this morning. Hi, Greg. What do you think of Stephen Nolan on BBC NI describing Donegal as awful, like a car park? Said he turned around, drove home. I don't listen to him, but seeing this on Twitter last night, I listened to it on BBC Sounds yesterday on the programme 38 minutes in. Thankfully, he was challenged by a caller, then said he didn't know what part of Donegal, but it was near Salt Hill. So the tweet in question, Nolan this morning interviewing Joanne Stewart about tourism investment. She clearly knew what she was talking about. Nolan says he drove to Donegal recently and it was just a car park, so he drove home again. Well, I mean, he's a shock jock, isn't he? And what was Ivan's name on News Talk as well? Part of the whole publicity, Ivan Yates, yeah, part of his stick, or a shtick as it was described, is to try and say things that are just antagonistic to get a reaction, because then all of a sudden you have people from the northwest of Ireland ringing in saying, what, our place is brilliant, blah, blah, blah. And it's lazy. It's lazy journalism. And I couldn't care less what he thinks. But if it does us any harm, it's not useful, is it? Okay. Right. I want to go now to Chrissy, who joins us on the programme now. Chrissy, thanks for taking the call today.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I know it's not easy, Chrissy, to speak out publicly on issues like this, and I'm sure it's something that you didn't want to do, but I presume you and your family and on behalf of Ruby feel that you have been kind of left with no alternative but to speak publicly on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I definitely did not want to take that to social media last night, but I just felt that I had no other choice. As you can read, everybody can read from my post, this is not the first, it's not even the second time, it's the third time that Ruby's been failed by her school. It's just absolutely disgusting. I felt I had no other options. Okay. I just felt we were backed into a corner once again.
All right. Well, the first line of your post, poor Ruby has been completely discriminated against, basically because she's in a wheelchair. So tell us the situation.
So Ruby's currently doing TY this year. There was a TY end of year trip organised. Now, I don't have dates or anything, but the trip has been, that date has been organised for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Now, they maybe didn't have the exact venue picked, but anyway, I was contacted last week, or I'm not even sure of dates, but anyway, before last week, to see if Alan and myself would maybe go to the trip to take Ruby. They were going to Emerald Park, and because Ruby had such a brilliant time in Paris and how she enjoyed the ride, obviously staff or FNAs aren't allowed to lift Ruby, which I can understand from manual handling, and that's fair enough. So her dad, Alan, would lift her on and off the ride while they did in Paris. So absolutely, like, we'd go to the ends of the earth to do anything for her. And he said, yeah, he would go, no problem. And they also asked, did Ruby want to go down in the bus or with her dad, which you can imagine, she's a 17-year-old young teenager. No, she did not want to go with her dad. She wanted to go on the bus like all her other friends. So
before we pick it up here, up until very recently then, all the arrangements were in place. It was okay for Ruby to go on the trip. She was going to be accommodated, and it was okay for your dad, her dad, to go as well to help her get on the rides. Emerald, that's formerly Tato Park, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so up until very recently, Ruby thought she was going, everything was in place.
Up until actually yesterday evening at 16 minutes past 3 when I got a phone call.
Talk to us about that phone call.
I just picked up my son from primary school, and I had got a phone call, pulled in along the side of the road. I was told that I'm sorry that there is no winter bus available for Ruby tomorrow. And you can imagine my tone of voice rose completely. Was I shocked? Am I shocked? No, I'm probably not shocked. I just can't believe that they've let it happen again, especially after what we went through a Paris trip. I just said, I don't accept this. It's discrimination. It can't happen. Rearrange your trip. Like, if you can't get a bus for all your other students, you don't go. You change your date for your trip. Like, so change your trip. Like, I was like, whatever, do what you need to do. So the person that I was speaking to says, right, I'll go away and see what we can do. And she spoke to me and other member of staff and came back and just said, I just basically was like, yeah, they know, but there's no bus.
And do you know Chrissy, do you know if this was an oversight in terms of what book was bussed, or did the company that was providing the bus call it short notice and say that the wheelchair accessible bus isn't working? Or
no, I don't even know any of the ins and outs of it.
This
trip wasn't organised last minute.
Yeah, no, as you say, it's been going on for quite some time.
You have a child with a wheelchair, so you're booking a company. Sorry, I have 20-odd students going, one in a wheelchair. Can you facilitate for this date, yes or no? If no, you move on. You keep moving on and you find another company.
And in that conversation, did they say, well, we can't accommodate Ruby, or did they say, well, she can drive down with her dad?
Ruby, well, basically, yeah. Like, she had no other option. If she didn't go with her dad, she wouldn't go. And obviously, Ruby was unaware of this. And I had to break the news to her yesterday evening. She was inconsolable. And all she kept saying was, Mommy, it's only Dublin. It's only Dublin. And I've been last week. She had been with schools last week or the week before on a wheelchair bus. And she says, it's only Dublin.
Can I ask, just for people that don't fully get it, how important is it for Ruby to be on the same bus as the students, to have that level of inclusion? You know, particularly because she is in a wheelchair. I presume the more equal she feels with everybody else, the better it is for her.
Yeah, she just wants to be treated like everybody else. She just wants to be your regular 17, teenage, hormonal girl. Like, she just wants to be the same, and it's just unbelievable. Like, it's not even once, it's twice, it's three times, and they don't care. They don't. It was just like, oh, well, don't go. Now, Ruby has told me I'm not going back to school. And now, if I get her back to school tomorrow, that will be massive. Like, Ruby already struggles with mental health, and this year, oh, my God, I don't know, this is awful.
And when you say this is not the first time it's happened, was this the same with the Paris trip that she had to travel separately? Or
she had a trip to Craigan Country Park, and the evening before, I got a phone call from school to say that they didn't have toilet facilities, so because Ruby has to be hoisted, and she also needs a changing bench for the staff to help her use the bathroom. So they didn't have that, which we could have got over that, because again, her dad would have went. But then I got a phone call to say, sorry, in fact, the wheelchair boat that Ruby was going to use is not working. Yes, fine, not school's problem, but I got this the night before. So basically, she couldn't go on that trip. The school put on a bus for her, sent her to Derry shopping. Brilliant. Brilliant, yeah. But no, it wasn't brilliant. Mm-hmm. Ruby was left isolated again, away from her friends. While all her other peers went on that trip to Craigan Country Park, she had to go shopping to Derry. Paris trip. Paris had been organised. I spoke to the person in charge before the summer holidays. I said, we as a family know what we come against whenever Ruby goes to go somewhere. It's not going to be easy. We're more than happy to help. We're willing. One parent, if not two, will go to help when she's on the other side. And just like whatever you need, we'll help. We'll work together. And basically 2 weeks before the trip, it was like, sorry, I've done everything that we can, and the tour company can't source wheelchair accessible transport on the other side. Mm-hmm. So basically, we've done everything we can. We can't go. Mm-hmm. That was left to me and Ruby's dad to source and book that trip.
Yeah, Chrissy.
A wheelchair bus.
Yeah, and it's clear that you and your husband will do anything to make sure Ruby is included, even if you had even if you had more notice, you maybe could have tried to explain the situation in a different way to Ruby obviously would not, still not be right. Don't get me wrong, I get that. But the fact that you would have to break the news to Ruby the night before the trip, when you don't really know when they knew that this bus wasn't available, it makes a very difficult situation even more difficult for you. And primarily, listen, we're talking about Ruby and how she feels her here, because you also say, and I think it's a very important line, that Ruby, she may be in a wheelchair, but she still has the same feelings as every one of us. And perhaps maybe even because what she's going through, her feelings are even more, you know, even more delicate than others as well.
Yeah, that's right.
We got in touch with the principal of the Millville Community College, and he says that he'll speak to you directly, but not through the media, which I respect that.
Yeah, which I can understand. But it's now, what time is it? It's now 9:45, and I have not heard from him. And while we tried to contact the school yesterday, he had left.
All right. So Ruby is away with Dad now at the moment on the way to Emerald Park. Is that right?
Yeah, on the way to Emerald Park, which, like, really, you can imagine social media, Instagram, Snapchat, all her wee friends will be sending Snapchats, which is
the bus
what
is
they
part
do
of
at that
age. The bus is the part of the, is,
yeah,
is a big part of the crack,
and that's
isn't
where
it?
You remember.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that's what, but that's just been taken away from her once again. And it's just heartbreaking that someone thinks that it's okay to tell, like, Ruby, because she has a disability and in a wheelchair, that she can't go because, sorry, there's no bus. It's like they said out there yesterday saying, hey, sorry, all you TY guys are going to Emerald Park tomorrow. Here's some sweets, but sorry, Ruby, you can't actually have any because they're not suitable for you.
Yeah. No, and listen, I think any parent or grandparent or auntie or uncle listening, they can imagine if they're, well, it's my own young fella's away on a trip to somewhere today in Donegal. And if I got a call last night and I had to go into the room and say to him, by the way, you're not allowed to go with the rest of the students, I know how upsetting it would be and the questions that would be asked. And you know, so we can, it's not hard for us to put ourselves in your position, Chrissy, because you know what I mean? We would not like to have that conversation. Was Ruby in decent spirits heading away this morning? I suppose, I mean, you'll try and make the best of it for her, of course.
They'll try and make the best of it, yeah, but no, not the same. Like, same as the power strip, there's no excitement. We don't talk about it too much then because it's raw, it's just horrible, it's just not right.
It's not right.
But, like, that's Ruby's life. Anywhere we go, like the towns, local towns, the businesses, entertainment facilities, they don't have the facilities. Mm.
And you'd worry too, Chrissy, about the future too, wouldn't you? Because, you know, this is a world that still is not very friendly to a person with a disability. And, you know, you and your husband, I hope you've lived long and healthy lives. But, you know, I'm sure there are times you think of, you know, that this world really needs to change for Ruby
completely.
To, you know, to be able to have her own independence and, you know, that sort of way. I've spoken to other parents before, and I know that those are the emotions that you feel. You just want your child, we love them all equally, you want your child to feel as accepted,
included
as everybody else. It's not a massive leap. You know, we've signed up to international rules in relation to this to make that commitment. All children are obliged to be treated equally. It's in our constitution. Okay, well, listen, what can I say? Other than I hope she has a great day, but you yourself are going to have to talk about it differently on her return, because she'll know it's been different and she'll have missed out on the bus trip and the crack on the bus and all that stuff as well. But I hope she has a great day. And I kind of get the sense, Chrissy, that you're concerned, well, what's next? When's it going to happen next? What's the next hurdle
that
you overcome?
I'm just waiting. Yeah. Like, it might be the end of a school year, but next year's become not even in school, outside school. We plan a day trip. We have to think about where we're going. We have to think, do they have toilet facilities? Is there a ramp?
Oh,
is there
yeah.
a step? Can
yeah.
we get in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just, this is our lives. It's absolutely awful. If you get into a car, your family, you just be like, right, where do we go today? It's not like that. We have to plan our trip.
No, and I saw myself with someone, an adult with good upper body strength, you know, toilets that I walked past and had a wheelchair symbol on. And I thought, well, you know, I would thought, well, there's wheelchair accessible toilets there. And they weren't. They weren't wheelchair accessible.
Yeah.
And I know people as well who, if they want to go to Knock or Dublin or what have you, especially if you require a hoist, that there are very, very, very few. I think there might be one in Sligo. You know what I mean? You have to meander your way to your location.
Yeah, you have to narrow it down. Ruby attended a trip in Dublin last week with school. They attended three arena. They actually had to go to the conventional centre to use the toilet facility.
My word.
Like that's three arena. That's our capital.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the outside of Croke Park. It's the landmark. It's the probably the landmark venue. It'll be packed on Saturday night for Katie Taylor.
Look, I should and I shouldn't be here on the phone with you. I should be supporting Ruby, helping her through her appointments, her social activities, not fighting for her to get something that she deserves and we shouldn't be fighting for.
The basics, I get you. And it is the base. I think this is the basics that we should be able to provide. Okay, Chrissy, well, we've been heard. I hope Ruby has a great time once she actually gets there. And she's obviously has fantastic support, and you and her dad as well, which is she's blessed with. But it's just difficult. That I can just imagine what it was like in the house last night. And we appreciate
just
you sharing.
Awful.
Yeah, I know. I really can. I'm not just saying that. I really can imagine what it was like. So hopefully this is the last time you have to go through something like this. But you know it's probably
I hope
not.
So.
You know it's probably not. The world needs to change big time. Chrissy, listen, best wishes to you and all the family and Ruby, and hopefully they have a safe journey and a good day. And thanks for chatting to us.
Okay,
thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay,
that's
bye.
Chrissy McCandless there. Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. We're going to talk about the gender pensions gap, the gender pay gap. Louise McCormick joins us. Hi, Louise. Thanks for taking the call this morning.
Hi, no problem.
Good to have you with us. This is something, obviously, you feel passionately about. You know, where we were at that might have at some point led to gender pay gaps aren't as much the issue anymore is the point I'm getting from your contribution.
Yeah, so I think there's it's a great piece of legislation that was passed, and it's really exciting to see all those figures come out from the various companies about what their gender pay gap is. Disappointing, I think, in a lot of cases. And then I think there's a lot of confusion about what the legislation is actually asking companies to report. So it's essentially the mean hourly gap. So it's hour by hour, how much is a male and female getting paid different. So this kind of is always inflated then by having a really high paid senior male managers, this kind of thing. A lot of things people are saying online, even since the companies have self-reported, is that it doesn't exist. And I suppose I'd like to talk about that. And I do understand why someone could think that, because the largest gaps that exist are in sectors like finance, insurance, legal. So if you don't work in those sectors, you might not see it. And also because the gap typically exists more predominantly at a manager level, it's not always something that's visible to people.
Yeah, okay. And what do you believe is the cause of the gender pay gap?
I think one of the biggest things, I mean, there's a number of things, but I think one of the biggest things is women not being promoted at the same level as men to management, senior management, executive level. And then when they are promoted to those kind of big salary jobs that will contribute to that figure, that their salaries aren't as high as the male salaries.
But so, why do you think if you know what I mean? What do you think someone in HR or who's responsible for elevating people or choosing the right person for the candidate, what's going on that leaves women so disadvantaged compared to men, in your view?
There's a number of things that contribute to it. Historically in Ireland, education would have been a big factor, but now we see that that's not a problem anymore. You know, the Times reported a couple of years ago, women are graduating higher degrees, higher completion rates. And then as soon as these young women enter the workforce, they start to see that problem. I think it's something that's socialized into us from a very, very young age, that men are leaders and that women are typically do certain jobs and men typically do certain jobs. So it's occupational segregation. It's women not putting themselves forward. There's a lot of statistics, LinkedIn published this statistics about women not putting themselves for jobs unless they have all of the qualifications and all of the desired outcomes. Mm. And men just seeing that they might have maybe 4 out of 10 and saying, well, I'm going to put myself forward for that. So it's something that's really just socialized from a very, very,
very early age, isn't
it?
I mean, if we're talking about the gender roles, for the most part, obviously there's a broader conversation about gender at the moment. But, you know, I think you point out in your comments too that from a very early age, girls are sent down this road and boys are sent down that road and what society expects of them.
Yeah, for sure. Harvard Business Review published last year an article about how men typically speak in a more abstract way rather than concrete. It's just the subtle thing, socialising to genders, and, you know, that then if you're perceived as a leader, you're more likely to become a leader. We start teaching gender bias to girls and boys as soon as they are born. Like last year, I was a volunteer in the toy appeal in Donegal, and we asked social workers and the people involved in those cases to recommend toys suitable for the 100 children that our volunteers bought for. In some cases, they made general recommendations, just kind of general recommendations. And in those cases, it came back that the boys were being recommended to get spatial toys, science toys, Duplo, Lego, when the girls were being recommended to be given dolls. Mm. So why is a two-year-old girl matched with a pink doll and boys getting colourful Duplo? And that's the start of it, and it only gets worse. How could anyone say girls are given the same opportunities as boys when, you know, we don't tell them that they can do anything. We don't instill that in girls. We don't encourage them to do science. You know, in a lot of cases, they're not valued. They're valued first for their beauty and, you know, their minds kind of second.
Yeah. So in the last minute or so we have, and maybe you might come on, Louise, and we can expand this conversation because I think it's quite interesting and I'm sure others would like to come into it. So in a minute or minute and a half, what would you like to see change then, maybe rather than, I mean, obviously the outcome, but, you know, the processes, you're talking about these defined gender roles and what have you. What do you think society needs to be doing?
I think just being aware, you know, just being aware is the first step. We made a simple thing. We included in every email to our volunteers to make sure where possible to include spatial educational toys for both genders. And people were incredible. They got the Duplo for both the boys and the girls. They got them science kits. It was great. So just being aware and kind of, you know, saying, oh, just make sure, just to have that in your mind. That really, really helped. And I think awareness is the first thing. You know, when people say, oh, there is no gender pay gap or those kinds of things, or, you know, boys should be boys, girls should be girls. I think just being aware of it and, you know, not pretending that it's not true and just kind of, you know, not getting too annoyed about you know, the changing gender roles, but just being aware of the, you know, the bias and discrimination that does exist. And,
right. There's loads I'd love to tease out with you, but unfortunately it's just right against 10. Louise, hopefully you'll chat to me again because there's a few things I'd love to speak to you about. So thank you for your time this morning. And as I say, we will set something up where we can have a longer conversation, but we do have to take a break now for the news and obituary notices.